Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
You can join the show here, and you can bring up absolutely anything you want. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. You can absolutely take control of the airwaves here on a Free Talk Live. That is kind of the point of the program. That's what we do. There's always stuff in the news that we think you might find of interest. And, of course, one of the big things that has been developing in the last few days and has been developing over the last few months and has been developing over the last couple of years is the banking, let's call it a crisis, at least for the banks. And if you happen to be caught up with an account at one of these banks, with you in the studio tonight, you've got Ian.
Nobody.
And Chris.
And let me turn you up there a little bit, Chris. All right, so the latest on the chopping block here in the world of bank failures, if you recall, it was just over a month or so ago that there was the bank failure at Silicon Valley Bank, which was subsequently seized by the FDIC.
Was it a bank failure or was it a targeted assassination of a bank?
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know if there's any proof of the latter happening.
It's only happening to banks that deal in crypto, though, and that's a bad sign.
I don't think that's true with First Republic. I've not heard that about them.
Okay, I may be wrong there. Frank worked.
That was the one with called Signature Bank, and that one did have about 25% of its accounts were having to do with cryptocurrency.
Okay.
So, and that one was also seized by the FDIC. And the rumor on that one was that Signature Bank was not failed, but that they did seize it simply to punish it for dealing with crypto. There's no proof of that.
And I'm guessing that Silicon Valley Bank was also big in crypto.
It comes off that they targeted certain banks over crypto connections, and it's sort of caused a realization that that the industry is sort of in this dangerous position, and it's like, but the banks themselves that they targeted were safer than like were let on, I guess.
No, I don't think that's true. I think that from what we've seen, at least according to the news that's been reported, there was a study that came out shortly after the first two banks went under that said that there's like 186 banks that are just as bad off financially as those other banks. They just haven't had the customer withdrawals coming in. They haven't had a run on the banks.
Well, I mean, that's kind of...
So they haven't tipped over into...
Right, but that's
so it's time to have some runs on the bank.
That's kind of what I was saying. I mean, the banks are... some of these banks that have failed have been some of the better rated banks. So,
but they're not in good shape. I mean, I don't know what the rating is you're referring to.
No fiat money bank is in good shape because they all practice fractional reserve. So every bank is technically insolvent.
Right, but what I'm saying is effectively the bank, the industry is sort of in a not hot situation, and then certain banks that were rated well were failing.
Who's
because
rating?
Of the targeting. Who's
themselves?
Rating?
The banks themselves? I mean, where are these ratings coming from?
Rating? Like,
Moody?
No. That's a good question.
Standard and Poor's?
I actually don't know.
Right, because, like I said, there was a study that I think it was Stanford did on the banks, and they found 186 banks that were bad off. As bad off as these other banks that have failed, they just haven't failed yet. So, like, how those banks could have a good rating, I don't know. I mean, if you're talking about Jim Cramer on CNBC, he also said to people to buy First Republic Bank 2 months ago, and now they're going to be taken by the FDIC. So, whatever the ratings are is garbage.
Well, Contra Cramer is actually an excellent investment strategy.
Right.
Just
so
take whatever Cramer says
and do the opposite,
and you will probably make money.
Yeah. So I don't know necessarily know if that's true, Ian. So think of it this way. If the best rated banks are failing, right, it could just be that they're all in really bad shape.
They are. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah. So I don't know what the rating is you're referring to because they're garbage.
Okay, so all I know is that I guess banks are rated as to like whether or not they're at risk of failing, and that...
Well, whoever's doing the rating is full of it because it's trash. these banks have, as the story with the
That's
Silicon
probably
Valley,
a good assessment of the situation.
Yeah, the story with the Silicon Valley thing was that they bought these long-term treasury bonds at very low rates, and then the central bank, the Federal Reserve, raised the rates 1,700%. They're still raising them in the last less than a year. And so what that did to the treasury bonds was it increased the yield on newly issued treasury bonds, but the ones that they bought, they're still stuck at 0 or 1% or, you know, whatever piddly amount those were. And then what happened with apparently with Silicon Valley Bank was customers came in and said, we want our money back. And it wasn't just a few customers, and these customers are very well heeled. So these customers are coming in saying, we want hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars in deposits. The total was $45 billion in 24 hours. And so the bank said, oh, crap, because as nobody pointed out, they're all fractional reserve. They've all taken their customers' money. They've invested it in long-term investments, and they only have a fraction of it available to actually give out to the customers that want to get their deposits back. So in order to get the money to pay out to the customers, they had to liquidate these treasury bonds on the secondary market. And in a secondary market for treasury bonds, you're selling to the highest bidder, and the highest bidders are saying, well, why do we want to buy this bond when we can get a new bond for 5% from the actual treasury? So you have to sell
it
a fraction.
And it's huge. It probably smells like smoke.
You have to sell it a fraction of what you paid for it. So they couldn't sell it fast enough, and they couldn't get enough money out, and so they got taken over.
So what? One of the things so fractional reserve banking has its problems, but as I understand it, they got rid of fractional reserve banking or something along
those
lines.
That's what they say happened in the early, in 2020 when the COVID thing, they supposedly removed the restrictions.
I don't know a whole lot about it, but I was actually just wondering what you guys thought of that.
What restrictions?
The reserve requirement.
They
said Trump removed that early on.
Okay, that doesn't eliminate fractional reserve banking. That
it just means they don't have to have a reserve.
It would eliminate the fractional part, so it would be zero reserve banking.
Right. That's what you're referring to, right?
Yeah, something along those lines. And I don't know a lot about it, right? So I just know, so my partner was talking to me about it, and it's something he keeps bringing up, and it just happens to be in my mind. And so I'm thinking, well, you know, we keep saying fractional reserve banking, but if we don't actually have fractional reserve banking, the situation is even worse than it appears.
Right. Well, I mean, that doesn't mean that the bank doesn't have, you know, $1 million that they can still give out to people that walk in the door.
Sure,
it doesn't mean they have zero. It just means they could have zero.
But the point was,
well, they have less than zero because all of their liabilities exceed their assets.
Yeah, I mean, the point to some degree of the fractional reserve system is that you have at least some amount of assets that were set, you know, in order to ensure that at least combined the banks wouldn't, if any one bank went under, they wouldn't all go under. Something along those lines.
Yeah, I don't know enough about what the intentions were of that, but that is supposedly something that they did change. So the latest news on this is that First Republic Bank is headed into FDIC receivership after dropping down in just the last week by a significant amount. So it had been at around $15. It is now, at the end of the day today, at $2.25. So it has tumbled down by...
I should buy the bank. I've got $2.50.
Now, this is 97% down, by the way, this year. So it was like $140 3 months ago, and it is now $2.25.
Yeah, it's always an interesting thought there, because if your bank, if your value of the bank is based on its customers and the customers flee because they believe you have no assets, then what assets are left are nothing.
You're left there with your assets hanging out.
There were customers that were able to get some money out. What kicked off the latest sell-off on the First Republic shares this week was that they had announced that they had a decline in deposits in the first quarter by 40%.
Wow.
So 40% of the, you know, presumably their customers said, I want my money out. And they did get it out.
Okay. I want my money out as an increase in withdrawals, not a decrease in deposits.
Isn't that the same thing when it comes to bank?
No. You withdraw when you put money in and take it back out. You have fewer deposits if you don't put it in at all.
I don't think
that's what that means.
Oh,
are you saying the amount of their total deposits?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's nobody putting money in, but there's people taking it out.
Numbers going out of the bank, I believe, was $100 billion in the last few months. Now, the bank did receive $30 billion in a subsidy from 11 major banks. So like 2 weeks or 1 week after the failure of Silicon Valley and Signature Bank, First Republic was already teetering. Like, it was looking bad. This was going to be the number three largest bank to fail. Like, we'd already had the number one and the number two largest banks to fail in many, many years. And First Republic was stationed at number three. And so what happened was the biggest banks, the 11 biggest banks, so you can probably name them, right? Bank of America and Chase and all those. They all ponied up about $2-3 billion apiece. And they said, we believe in regional banking. We support our regional banks, and we are going to give $30 billion from our own chess war chest to First Republic Bank just to make sure that everything's okay. Everything's okay, folks. Your deposits are safe. Here's $30 billion just to shore up First Republic Bank. We just want to make sure that the customers are taken care of. Don't panic. Whatever you do, don't panic. Don't run in and withdraw. They're fine. Everything's fine. Here's $30 billion. That's gone.
Yeah.
That's gone.
It's interesting. Yeah, and you have to ask the question of why are they doing that? And it's because the industry is collapsing or about
to. No, that's what we said at the time. We said that this is just to buy time.
Right.
And how much time is the only question.
Yeah. Do we know what the status is? Like, I wonder if anybody has some sort of chart that kind of can give us an idea of, I know the reserve, I believe where the government will step in and bail out the banks. There's only so much of that.
That's right.
In terms of funds. Mm-hmm. I wonder where those funds are right now.
Good question.
Isn't it like $150 billion? It's not very much.
It wasn't much. It was like 128, 150, somewhere in that range. Yeah.
Right.
Now that was before they paid out to the first two banks that went under. Now, they didn't have to bail out all of those customers because I think some other banks came in and bought. And those banks still had some assets that they could liquidate, so there was still some money in those.
It kind of makes you wonder if that's why those banks got together and doled out cash to some of these other banks to keep them from going under. Because the government system doesn't work.
Well, they didn't want a third bank to go down 3 weeks in a row.
Right.
Because that would look like something's happening here, and maybe people would start to notice. Now, are people lined up outside of the banks here in Keene, New Hampshire? Probably not. Are they going to show up there tomorrow morning to withdraw their money from TD Bank or whatever the other ones are here in town? I think there's a Bank of America. Probably not. There doesn't seem to be a panic yet at this point. They've managed to stave this one off far enough to where now it's a month ago. People have forgotten about what happened a month ago, and this is just one more bank going down. But it's noteworthy that it's the very same bank that they bailed out with $30 billion that is now down to a fraction of what it was worth just 2 months ago, and to the point where now the report is, according to Reuters, that the FDIC is going to take this bank over. So it is curtains for federal, whatever the hell they're called. Sorry, First Republic Bank. So that's the next one down. Yay!
Yeah.
Take your money out while you still can, or at least some portion of it.
If you,
three down,
if you
a few hundred to go.
It's a few thousand. There's about 4,000 banks as of last count in the United States. They're not all the worst of the worst, of course, but
the interesting thing about this too is people haven't, most of us who are alive today haven't seen this in our lifetime, so we don't know.
That's true.
We don't take the precautions that we really should. If you've ever had a grandparent maybe who went through the Great Depression, you'll know that they keep money under the bed, and
they wash tinfoil.
Well,
right. They can be a little bit frugal with their money.
For sure.
And because
they learn the hard way.
And we the generations that have come since haven't learned that lesson. And it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. So learn from your grandma.
Strong men cause easy times. Easy times cause weak men. Weak men cause bad times.
Mm-hmm.
Bad times create strong men.
Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting detail. We'll see how this all shakes out. And how many other banks, of course, are on the edge of failure? That is information that the Federal Reserve certainly doesn't want you to know.
No, definitely won't be hearing any reports on that.
They don't want you to have. What do you do, though?
Short answer, all of them.
Yes. Well, yeah. And I do wonder if there are any, like, fiscally prudent banks out there.
There's one. They got denied membership in the FDIC.
Custodia Bank, you're referring to.
That's an interesting
it's
question.
Crypto bank.
That's an interesting question, Ian. Mm-hmm. There were some small banks that basically survived, like, the 2008 housing crash, because of their, I don't know if frugalness is quite the right word, but basically they
didn't go in
too
deep.
A lot of them saw through the BS and said, we're not writing these loans.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they didn't, it was the bigger banks, it sounds like, mostly that were the problem. Not that it wasn't an industry problem.
And the prudent banks
but
got screwed.
Yeah,
because they didn't make the profit that the other banks made because they saw that what the other banks were doing was wrong, and then they didn't get the bailout money. So the banks that did the foolish things ended up better off than the banks that did the right thing.
Well, it's interesting. This is socializing risk.
Yeah.
The people who take the risks don't have a negative impact. And, it's kind of interesting because this is sort of, I think, why we end up with these situations that we do in society where we're all losing out. And I think of it, unfortunately, it's hard for me to avoid thinking about it from like a scam perspective, but we all end up, getting punished. And I'm going to use credit card scams just as an example. People think that, when their card is, money is taken from them from their bank account or something starts with their credit card and it's fraudulent, they get frustrated. But what they don't really understand is that when they reject those charges, they're still eating the costs. It's because those costs end up getting the merchant ends up paying a fee to the bank and they lose the product. And who do you think ends up having to pay for that? It's all the customers. So, yes, you rejected the charges, and yes, it was inconvenient, but it wasn't the inconvenience that was the problem. Is that it eventually cost you financial money. And who's the cause of the real problem? It's the banking system, because the banking system refuses to fix the problem that they could fix when it comes to insecure credit cards.
That's if you even can challenge the unauthorized charge. I just had an issue with this recently where I had subscribed to like an online YouTube show that I enjoyed. I was doing like a yearly donation to them or whatever, and I decided to cancel last year the yearly donation, and that was on track to be canceled in this April. And then in February, I noticed that there was a charge that came in from this same, purportedly the same organization for another year. And I'm like, well, that's weird. Why did that happen? If it was going to happen, it would have happened in April, because it was a yearly thing that was happening in April. But all of a sudden, it's in February. And I looked into it, and it came from a completely different website that was sort of looked like the other site. So it almost looked like it was either an imposter website or it was maybe their old site that they'd forgotten to shut down or something like that. So it was like a really weird circumstance. I reached out to them. They didn't respond. And so I said, all right, well, I'm just going to contact the debit card company and, say, hey, like, this was unauthorized. I didn't ask for this. I already canceled my subscription over here. And they said, after taking forever to get back to me, they said, well, you haven't had your other subscription canceled fully yet, so we have no rights to challenge this. I said, well, it was a completely unauthorized transaction by a completely different website. What is the status of the first subscription have to do with it? So, well, sorry, we can't challenge it. So I was like, all right, fine. I'll wait until April, until the thing, the other subscription that I was canceling is finally canceled. So I got back in touch with them 2 months later and showed them all the same stuff that I showed them before. And then they came back with me the opposite excuse. They said, well, because your subscription has canceled, we have no right to challenge this. And once again, I explained to them, like, what are you talking about? I'm challenging the one that has nothing to do with the subscription that was canceled. Like, you just, I couldn't even get through to them what I was trying to challenge. I think finally I have gotten one of them to, because, and they keep handing it off to different agents, right? So it's like,
yeah,
every time you talk to them, it's somebody else. And then, and it was, you know, it's only $30. It's not the,
right,
it's not
right,
the end of the world, but, you know, for some people, $30 means whether or not they can pay the power bill at the end of the month. And,
yeah, man.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, and it's like, it's a week before they'll give me any answer, and it's always the wrong answer, and then I have to, like, try to clarify it for them, then it's another week. So, like, this has been going on for 2 months.
What bank is this? This, I mean, that's just, like, that just sounds crazy, the story. And the craziness of the story
is... debit cards don't have the same
protections
as credit cards.
That's actually, I think, only partially true. So it depends on how the debit card is used. If it's a PIN transaction, you're right. But if it's a, if it's using the Visa, MasterCard network or American Express, well, usually
this isn't
Visa,
a PIN. This
American.
Is just an online
right. So you are actually protected at least anything over $50 is protected. So technically the bank or the financial institution can charge you $50, but the rest of it they actually have to waive legally because there's a law on this. But this all goes back to the socialization of risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what's weird about this is that they actually get to charge a fee that's more than $30. Well, they can charge $50 to $100 to the merchant if they do the rejection of that charge. So it's absolutely crazy that an employee at a financial institution would be like, oh, no, we can't do that because they're making money off of it.
Well, I didn't call their credit card processor. I called my card company, so they wouldn't be issuing the fee. It would be the fee would come from the merchant account of that company.
Right, right.
So they wouldn't know. They don't know about the challenge. Because there's no challenge from their perspective.
So your card... the financial institution that you have a card with would be getting something like between $50 and like $100 if they reject the charge,
really?
Though. Yeah.
The end mm-hmm. destination.
Yep. The merchant will lose the money, and then your bank will get the $50 to $100
they didn't
bucks
do it.
For it. So that's why I'm saying it's a very bizarre.
It is.
It's true that a merchant can, like, sort of object to the refusal, but
because customers can stand too, right?
Yeah, right. But generally speaking, it's always going to go in favor of the cardholder, not the merchant.
If you want to join the show here, the number is 603-283-6160. You can bring up absolutely anything that you want. We got a little bit more on the economy. Plus, the Fed chair, Jerome Powell, got tricked online by some pranksters who are pretending to be Zelensky from Ukraine. I don't know if you guys have heard about this. These Russian pranksters, I believe, are using some sort of AI to masquerade as though they're the head of Ukraine. And we'll tell you more about it.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
U.S. USA News Update. Severe weather could be hitting as many as a dozen states. The greatest risk will be in Central Texas, where more than 7 million people are in the target for enhanced risk of severe weather with strong winds, large hail, and isolated tornadoes. A Supreme Court justice believes he knows who leaked the bombshell abortion draft ruling. Last year, Politico published a leaked draft of a Supreme Court opinion on a case that eventually led to Roe v. Wade being overturned. Months later, the Supreme Court said an internal investigation could not ID the leaker. U.S. regulators will take over First Republic Bank. Reuters reports the FDIC will place the troubled bank under receivership imminently, as there isn't any more time for a rescue of the bank through the private sector. Pope Francis is in Hungary for the start of a three-day visit. It's the 86-year-old Pope's first foreign trip since he was briefly hospitalized last month. Jerry Varmash, USA News.
Have you ever watched a video on the internet and found yourself waiting for the skip the ad button? The reason this takes a few seconds is because the video delivery companies get to collect impression commission, and the viewer never sees the advertisement. The company still pays full price to run the ad. Does this sound like a scam to you? Is there any wonder why internet ads are so ineffective? For over 100 years, radio has been a proven source for companies' messages. Radio listeners are engaged and want to support the companies that sponsor the shows they're so passionate about. Simple companies like window treatments, security, pillow companies, and more have been able to break away from the big box stores, building multi-million dollar businesses. Find out what radio can do for your business. Call 877-996-4327 or advertise at gcnlive.com. That's advertise at gcnlive.com.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join the show here. You can bring up absolutely anything that you want to discuss. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. And we have a website. There's a lot of features on that site. You can enjoy those. Head on over to freetalklive.com. We have our Mastodon server, which is our own social media server. And you can go there and interact with other Free Talk Live listeners at social.freetalklive.com. Speaking of some of those listeners, I want to say thank you to Nathan, who is a gold-level supporter of AMPS. AMPS stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. It's a way for you to get behind what we do here on Free Talk Live, and Nathan does that as a gold-level supporter, which means he's doing $10 a month, so thank you, Nathan, for stepping up and helping us spread the ideas of liberty and peace, cryptocurrency, the things we talk about here every night on Free Talk Live, 7 nights per week. So head over there to amps.freetalklive.com. As we continue here, I want to go to the phones where we have Tommy on the line in Florida. Tommy, you're on Free Talk Live.
Tommy, can you hear me?
Hey, brother, good morning. I hear all you guys. Can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, hey, Mr. Nobody, Mr. Penguin. There's been a lot of things on my mind recently, and I know that the feds are coming down hard on Ian and Bon Bon and the rest of the crew. Mr. Penguin knows me well. I've been calling you for 13 years, and Ian knows me well. And guess what? I've been following Nobody's plan for the past 10 years. As he has been
Nobody's
calling...
Plan?
I've got a plan.
Nobody's plan.
Nobody's had a plan. He's got a plan. You've got a plan, and he's following it, apparently.
Well, Groovy, well, is it working out for you? Maybe I should try.
I have no idea. Maybe nobody. You know what? It's taken me 10 years, and now I finally got to the promised land, and now Ian's going to jail. Arya's going to jail. It's taken me a decade to get here, and now I finally got here doing Nobody's plan.
Where are you?
10 years ago.
I thought you were in Florida.
I'm in Florida. I'm in Florida.
Okay.
I'm stuck in Florida. And now Ian,
okay.
I mean, we've been working for this for 10 years, and now when I finally get to the promised land, Ian's going off to jail.
Is Florida the promised land? I'm so confused. I thought Florida was where we came from.
Yeah, you might have things a little backwards. We left Florida, at least Nobody and I. We used to live in Florida, and we left there.
That's not the promised land.
To come to New Hampshire. I mean, Florida's the place you would want to go if you love conservatism, if you love crackdowns on immigration, which we just learned about this week. DeSantis is going to do the worst crackdown on immigration in any state in the last decade. If you love the idea of eight people being able to send, eight jurors out of 12 being able to send someone to the death penalty, they're passing that in Florida as well to make it the easiest state to hand out the death penalty to people. So, I mean, that's the kind of place you found yourself in there, Tommy.
That's not the promised land.
No.
Besides all that, I've been focusing on Nobody's promised land for 10 years on how to...
What are you talking
accidents.
About?
Nobody.
Are you talking about New Hampshire? Are you talking about the Free State Project?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
No. I'm talking about in general. Nobody, and I'm not saying I did this. I don't know who did this. But nobody has been stating for 10 years, if you want to really do activism, stick it to the state, get on disability, come to New Hampshire, and stick it to the man with activism. What are you going to do?
I'm going to say, what the hell are you talking about again?
I don't know. Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
Nobody doesn't know what you're talking about.
And it's not like anybody's been trying to do it. I mean, my God, what a bunch of morons.
Are you saying,
brother?
Tommy, that you are on welfare and you're living in Florida?
I'm saying nobody's been saying for 10 years they get on welfare and come to the free state and fight for the, you know, for the project.
I mean, I have heard nobody say in the past that there's nothing wrong, and I agree with you, Nobody. I don't think there's anything wrong with this. If, you know, you paid into the system, you might as well get some of that money back out, and even if you're getting more out than you paid into it, then screw them. Use that money to turn against them, basically.
Your choices are be a victim... Of taxation or take money from the people who are taxing you, it's better to take money from them than to give money to them, because they will use your money for mass murder if you don't take it back.
I got a little issue with it. I'm not saying there's nobody, but there's almost... Sorry, no one. There's almost no one who is going to get more money out of the system that they've put in.
This is true.
I mean, the people who have put nothing in will get more out.
But almost everyone.
And that's a large number of people.
Almost everyone has put more money in because it's going
There's a lot of people who have never worked a day in their life.
Sarah.
Yeah.
I didn't say there was no one, but there's almost no one. And part of the reason is even Sarah has probably paid in through things like sales taxes and maybe although she's got subsidized rent probably, but
yeah,
there are ways that the state gets money out of all of us pretty much that you don't know about. Increased prices, for example, through tariffs.
Yeah.
But
if you've never worked, then everything they take from you, they gave to you first.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost no one. It's not no one.
Okay, but is that what you're referring to, Tommy? You're talking about how over the years nobody has suggested this particular aspect of something someone could do and said, this is activism?
whatever you got to do to get to New Hampshire, nobody always praised it to fight the state. And so whatever we got to do, we got to do. And by God, now it's been 10 years I did what I got to do, and I'm trying to get there to New Hampshire, and now you're going to prison.
If you did what you have to do, how are you still stuck in Florida?
I'm just sad. I mean, my God, we've been working so hard. You know, we got
to
keep going.
All you had to do was get on a bus, Gus.
Did you think, Tommy, that they weren't going to put somebody in prison?
Well, I was hoping we could, you know, get around a little gray area, a little sign here.
Did you think for a moment that if the Free Staters were to become an actual threat, and I don't mean a violent one, but a peaceful threat to the status quo, did you think that if they actually stood the position of potentially reducing the size and the scope and the influence of government, or potentially encouraging people to secede from the United States, that the federal government wouldn't lift a finger to go after those people?
I thought if you had all the loopholes and everything all put together, that they could. But they don't give a shit. Oh. They don't care.
Yeah, well,
I didn't say it.
Yeah, I know you didn't, and I appreciate that. But, yeah, of course, they're a violent gang. That's the tool that they have. That's the only thing they know how to do is to use violence. So, of course, they're going to turn to violence. Of course, they're going to put people in prison cells. That's what they do.
When the only tool you have are jackbooted thugs, everybody looks like a baby seal that needs to be clubbed.
Well, anyway, thanks, nobody. I've been working on this for a decade, and now I got none. I'm just kidding. We'll get it figured out. I love you guys.
Thank you, Tommy. Good luck to you. Good luck to you down there.
I'm not sure what he's been doing for a decade, though. He started out in Florida. He's still in Florida. That's not a lot of progress.
Yeah, it shouldn't take. I mean, unless you are the most tied down individual, you know, you've got a business with multiple locations and a family and you're in the middle of school or something, right? Like, you've got some excuse.
Ex-wives with kids are the biggest thing.
Yeah, that is.
Because you can't get your ex-wife to move.
Yeah, that's true. That is a big
tie down. I don't even know. I mean, so maybe the business one, I think, is just a poor excuse, but maybe the kids with the ex-wife, that may be 10 years.
But he didn't say that was what was holding
Depends on whether you like your kids.
That's true. That's true.
I can take them or leave them, so.
But, you know, 10 years is a long time. Maybe, you know, if it is a kid's thing, then he can come up after 18 years or something like that. I don't know. Let's go to Crichton, though. He's on the line in Kentucky. You're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead, Crichton.
I think he's just walking to Florida from Miami. I mean, walking to New Hampshire from Miami, just as far as he's gotten.
I think he's making 10
years.
Well,
it's taken him 10 years to get this far. He's a slow, slow man.
I think it would be...
He did mention he was disabled, so...
I guess.
Did I miss that?
I mean, some people do the Appalachian Trail in what, like several months or something? Or
Yeah. I mean, 10 years is enough time.
What, you know, I know people who have biked to New Hampshire from Florida. So, I mean, maybe he could just get an electric bike and, you know, if he's disabled, problem solved.
I know a guy who walked here from Seattle.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah. What was his name?
Will.
Will, yeah.
Wow.
He's still up here.
Yeah.
He still does state house activism.
Well, good God, if I'd walked here from Seattle, I'd probably never leave either.
He called that the Walk for Liberty.
Yeah.
Was what that was called. That was many years ago. All right, Craig, what else, man?
Yeah, I wanted to revisit a topic that came up a couple days ago. The right to repair.
Yeah.
And
the right to do what?
Repair.
Oh, okay.
The right to repair our devices, our machines. And it was kind of passed off as not being very important. And I think I want to challenge that concept.
Well, I don't know if I said it was not important. I said that this is a tough issue, actually. Yeah. I said that, you know, from a libertarian perspective, I don't support forcing companies to have to reveal their schematics to people. But at the same time, I think you should be not legally liable for anything if you crack open your iPhone and you want to go in there yourself and try to repair something.
I think there's an opposite kind of point on the libertarian side here, and I think that is neither party should be forced to do anything.
Right.
Companies shouldn't be forced to reveal schematics or release source code or do anything of that nature. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I should be able to reverse engineer that software, or if the sources are released, make copies of it
without being sued.
Or the binary of it, for that matter. It's intellectual property or copyright that's actually the reason that we end up with these, even in situations where, you know, corporations are not based around copyright. They all utilize it, basically, to gain more control over the markets than they would otherwise have. We'd have more free market competition without copyright. So I think that's basically what I'm trying to say, is that's the target you should focus on, not forcing companies to do anything.
Which is what the right to repair bills, as I understand it, are doing.
Right. And we should have the right to try to repair stuff. That doesn't necessarily mean that anybody else should be obligated to provide you with parts or components. What you should be doing is using the free market to not buy from those companies that are not giving you those parts.
Yep. And that's what I said essentially the other night. And I think it is an important issue, Crichton, but what did you want to add to it? Crichton? Uh-oh, you just hit a bad cell. No, we probably lost every word there. Start that sentence over, please.
Okay, can you hear me?
We got you now. Go ahead.
I wanted to skip over the intellectual property right issue at all because it's not even necessary to my point. When you buy our devices, they come in with two major components. They come with the hardware and the software. And whether or not the software is an intellectual property or not is beside the point. When you buy the hardware, it belongs to us.
Mm-hmm.
The physical object is inarguably ours. And if for whatever reason it doesn't work, whether it's a physical problem or a software problem, if we don't have the right to fix that problem ourselves, either by changing parts or by replacing the operating system with one that better suits us,
mm-hmm.
then we don't own that object. And
my question is, do you not have that right today?
We don't, but the solution isn't to force companies to give you.
Why don't you? What's to stop me
from
opening up?
So there's laws that prevent you from opening up and reverse engineering stuff and trying to fix your own hardware. There's something called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and part of that prohibits that sort of thing. I just as an example.
It prohibits disabling things that they call anti-circumvention measures, which means anything they do to prevent you from doing what you want to do with your property.
That's the bigger problem. The people who are advocating for right to repair, while you can sympathize with them, it's not the right direction to go.
Are they proposing to get rid of that?
No, not as far as I know. But that's what we should be focusing on.
Yeah, that would seem to solve the problem.
You know, not trying to force companies to give us parts just because we prefer an Apple over something else.
I have a different perspective than that, I think. My problem I see is that when a company sells you an iPhone, for example, I'll just take that as an example, and if you buy the iPhone, you believe you bought it, you paid a large sum of money to buy the iPhone, and then 3 years down the line or 7 years down the line, the company that upgrades the software no longer supports that device. Well, what happened is that your device is now broken by no fault of your own, and the company that sold it to you broke it. So they didn't treat it as your property. They treated it as theirs. So when they sold it to you the first time and told it was to you that it belonged to you, that was fraud. That's my problem with
deception. It's an interesting argument, you might have something there, but it's a little bit hard to see if you know what I mean. I think the answer to this is free market and not buying from companies that tie their products into cloud services and similar.
Right. You could grab an Android, wipe that thing, and put on one of the open source alternatives.
Right. We don't need a law on this, I don't think. I think the answer is to stop doing business with fraudsters and scammers. It's not like we don't know who they are. It's not like it's impossible to figure out. This is stuff that is pretty well known. I mean, when people are advocating for right to repair, most of it's around Apple. I mean, everybody knows Apple does this. I mean, the way to not have this problem is not buying
Apple. They've done it forever.
Right. I mean, this is not new.
Back in the day, Apple was my favorite company in the world.
What, when Apple II, he was around?
Yeah, and I loved my Apple II.
In 1984?
And I bought one of the very first Macintoshes to come off the line.
You know, black and white?
Black and white, built-in monitor, 128K of RAM.
Yeah.
And I wanted to open it up and look inside, so I went down to the computer store, and I said, yeah, I seem to need a different kind of screwdriver than I have to open the case on this thing so I can look inside. And they said, yeah, we can't sell that to you. It's illegal. And I never bought another Apple again.
Yep.
And I still have not. I own a Mini Mac, but I didn't buy it. Somebody gave it to me. And technically, Cell 411 owns it.
That was bought used too for like $200.
Yeah, you know something else I want to point out is that there are options on the market that do the opposite of what Apple and a lot of these other companies do. And yes, it does take a little bit of effort to seek them out, but it's not like it's impossible.
What are these options? Like
well, my own company is one of them, but that's a little self-serving here, so I will.
That's okay. You can advertise.
All right, ThinkPenguin.com. So my company, we sell Linux systems that. We basically have the opposite philosophy. We try to empower users by giving them access to the components, parts, and not even necessarily just for our systems that we sell, but for any system that is at least a little bit more open and isn't as locked down.
I gotta say, I'm very pleased because I have a Think Penguin laptop that was actually given to me after the FBI stole everything I owned, and one of the keys has flipped off the keyboard, and I asked Mr. Penguin tonight, hey, can you get a laptop can you get a keyboard for my laptop? And he said, we have those. So I was like, oh wow, that's
good
nice.
Service.
Yeah. We actually stock parts and new parts, and yeah, even many years later, you can actually get replacement parts for us.
Well, I don't want to go too far afield here, but Crichton, is there anything else you wanted to say about this?
Yeah, I use the Apple example because everyone thinks about that. But the problem I have with this is that it's not just Apple. I mean, it's not just phones. It's all kinds of electronic devices, but it's not just electronic devices. It's also cars and tractors for your farm. There's all kinds of examples.
Yeah, that's true. Like there's coffee makers that you can only use their special K-cups or whatever, and you gotta know where you can go.
K-cup. God, she's really built.
You can go in and cross the wires or solder a part, and then you can undo the restrictions. But you gotta spend a little bit of time on that. But that said, I think still your solution here, Chris, is the right way to go. Not every company does this. Some companies do make their schematics available.
Yep.
And you just have to give your business to the right companies.
Yeah, we have DRM-free coffee, by the way, coffee mugs.
DRM-free, really?
yep. And explicitly because of the Keurig situation. And you know what?
That's what I was.
You know what we did when we did. Me and my partner did. I don't actually drink coffee, but we did when that happened when they started adding DRM to coffee makers, Keurig coffee makers. We went out and bought a different coffee maker.
Boom, problem solved. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Crichton, thanks for the call tonight, man. I appreciate it. The number here is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. If at some point you find yourself, and I'm not saying Crichton was saying this, but if at some point you find yourself saying the government ought to, or that the solution to a given problem is that the government should create some kind of regulation or some kind of program, you are off the program, right? Like you have you're off the reservation. You've lost
you have forgotten the face of your father.
You've lost your way, and you have to remember that that is the hallmark of someone who has lost their creativity. You do not have a creative solution. You have not thought of a peaceful market-based solution that can solve your problem. It's out there. And you've just decided to go straight to the guns of government to solve it.
Yeah. The only proper sentence that starts out with "the government ought to" ends with "jump up its own booty hole and die in sewage."
Yeah. Most of the problems, I think, most of the problems that we have are the result of violence and government, and the way to fight government and violence is by advocating for repealing laws. You know, the reason we only have one or two options on the market is because of, you know, things like licensing and copyrights and the things that are, they're a tool.
Repealing laws is great, but have you ever tarred and feathered a politician?
Let's continue here. We got Alu Axelman on the line from the Liberty Block, and you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, what's up?
I agree with what you guys and the last two callers the last few nights have been saying about right to repair. I heard about that kind of legislation a few years ago, and I thought it was very interesting. I understand why people support it. Pretty complicated, but like you said, Ian, pretty much if it violates the natural right to contract and violates the property rights of anyone, then I would not support it. If it protects against things that are laws, like Penguin mentioned, there are some laws seemingly that prevent people from doing certain things, then I would support it. So it just comes back to the simplistic kind of property rights doctrine.
But I'll tell you what, if you start a company that will sell me phones that I can upgrade and repair, I'll pay more for that phone than I would pay for some solid state piece of crap that I don't trust.
Yeah, that's true. You pay more for freedom in some cases, right?
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about the recent study that came out a few days ago, I guess, about the masks. And breaking news, if you rebreathe your own CO2, it's bad because you're going to have increased CO2. I know, it's shocking. I actually wrote
no
that
shice,
over
Sherlock. What's your next clue?
yeah.
So now there's a study apparently about this. Go ahead, Alu.
Yeah. In March of 2021, when I first published my book, there were two whole chapters on masks. One of them dealt with the medical issues with masks, one with the social and psychological issues. But yeah, it explained, like, very simply, anyone can feel it, and I can feel it when you put on a mask. There's some dead space there. You rebreathe some of your carbon dioxide. You're supposed to breathe essentially zero, like 44 parts per million, or like 0.04% or something of CO2 in the air. Then you exhale like 6%, the byproduct of metabolism. But you're supposed to exhale that. But then when you're exhaling, it's 6% CO2.
You guys make this way too complicated. Obviously, it's harder to breathe with a mask on.
Sure, but it's
even if you put your head under the covers, you know, it'll help you stay
exactly
warmer, but
yeah.
But eventually you're going to want to get some fresh air.
Yeah, that's not all he's saying, though, Chris. Yeah, it's obviously harder to breathe in when you have something covering your face, but what he's saying is it's also bad for your health to breathe in the thing, the chemical that you are outwardly expelling, because that is supposed to be going out from your body, not back into it. And now there's an actual study that has been done showing some potential health problems coming from rebreathing.
Yeah, summarization of this is it's harder to breathe with a mask on. But
yeah. You will almost never benefit by consuming any of the things that comes out of your body.
Right.
Unless you're a dog, because they don't retain certain vitamins.
Yeah, so I explained in the book, there are two issues. Obviously, breathing in, what your body really needs is oxygen, so it restricts that a little bit, so your oxygen will be, you know, a tiny bit lower, or you'll have to work harder, and breathing out the carbon dioxide. So both are actually restricted a little bit, and eventually, you know, chronically a long-term lower oxygen level and higher carbon dioxide level are both pretty bad for you, it turns out.
Indeed. Alu, thanks for joining us, man.
Well, I've noticed, I've seen how stupid people have gotten since COVID. They're even stupider than they used to be.
And Alu, by the way, is a professional ambulance guy. He's an EMT, so he knows a thing or two about
Ambulance chaser.
No, not one of those. Thanks, Alu, for the call. We got more coming up here. Hour number two is on the way. You can join us on Free Talk Live.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there are some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about the alarming increase in man-made disasters, financial institutions collapsing, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare. And the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on over a dozen emergency food kits. These include tasty breakfasts, lunches, dinners, drinks, fruits, veggies, meats, and snacks, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. My Patriot Supply food kits are in stock and shipped discreetly. We've seen too many Americans let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com. Or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.